Seriously, I grew up ignorant. I grew up ignorant of my family's story. I grew up ignorant of my family's faith heritage. I grew up remarkably ignorant. I remember being 16, and it was a Saturday afternoon. My grandfather had come to our house. He had eaten a bun, taken a second one, and eaten it. My mom had asked what it was like, and he grunted, said something about he couldn't taste the first one until the second one was in his mouth, and then he left. And I said to my mother, why is Grandpa so difficult, so grumpy all the time? She said, I don't think of him as grumpy. And I said, well, he's just hard. And my mom got this faraway look, and she said, when your father has covered you with hay and gone out at night and only returns in the morning with frost on his back and mud on his knees, she said, this thing about the buns, it's a little thing. I was 16. I didn't have a clue what she was talking about. I grew up ignorant. I had no idea that my mom, as a 13, 14-year-old young woman, had been fleeing from advancing Russian forces, that she had slept in haystacks in Austria, that her father, my grandfather, was so worried about what would happen in the future that he would go out at night and spend his night on his knees and come back in the morning with frost on his back. I was ignorant. And in my ignorance, I rebelled. I rebelled at everything that my parents had tried to do. They wanted me to be a part of the youth group and sing in the choir, and we tormented the choir leader. Until finally we were invited not to return. Salvation at last. Then we were forced to go to Saturday school. And we tormented the teachers there as best we could until finally that was given up. And finally, going to this private religious high school and tormenting the teachers there, finally being told that if we didn't straighten up, that we would be invited to leave, which was simply a license to conclude that chapter with expulsion. All of this happened 1972, 1973. And it was in 1973 that I first experienced a Mennonite Passover. And that's the part I want you to remember, a Mennonite Passover. 1973, I was making some money. What I managed to do is I ran a chicken catching crew, dirty, dusty business. I was making $300 a week, cash money, never declared it for income tax. I always had money in my pockets. And as part of that, I was able to buy half of a Superbug, one of those Volkswagens with a little bit larger engine and a sunroof. I had a fancy sword handle for a stick shift. And the sunroof was great because I had taken up smoking, another part of my rebellion against my parents. And it was great because you could have a cigarette and the smoke would whip out the window and you wouldn't smell all that badly when you got home, so you could actually fake that, no, you actually hadn't had a cigarette. And I lie. One day in April 1973, I was told by my mother that I'd been invited to my grandfather and grandmother's house for lunch. It was Saturday. I didn't want to go. I was told in no uncertain terms that I was going for lunch to Grandma and Grandpa's house. Grandpa the curmudgeon and Grandma, who was 5 foot even, 315 pounds, who had this habit when stories were told about Russia, she would go to the breadboard with her serrated bread knife and cut on the breadboard. Just to have a sense that this was a woman who had difficulty controlling her aggravation. She hated Russians for what they had done to her family and various members of our extended family. We think we have about 11 people in total who were either arrested or were killed or were sent to exile and died in the former Soviet Union. We have some personal animosity towards Mr. Stalin and his friends. So here I was, told that I had to be at Graham and Grandpa's house on Grant Street at noon. So I knew that if I took a little bit of a longer route, I could have a cigarette before I went to Graham and Grandpa's house, and I rolled up the sunroof so I could make sure that the smoke whipped out the top and I wouldn't smell too badly, and I could make an excuse that I'd been around someone else, because I felt guilty about smoking even though I was determined that I was going to do that. As you can imagine, I was 17 years old and an idiot. It's that age. Some of us work harder at being idiots than others. And I had no clue as to what would happen on that Saturday at noon. I was invited for lunch. I arrived, having butted out my cigarette at the corner of Pierneville and Grand Street, and thinking I probably shouldn't have done this, I'm going to offend my grandmother and grandfather. Showed up at the Grand Street address, went in, and I was greeted by this simple meal. If you can imagine a whole ham, and the skin peeled back and peeled off of the ham, fat side laid down flat on a large cookie sheet, and a big whack of dough placed on top of it, dripping with fat, skin side up. That was being pulled out of the oven. It smelled wonderful, but the fat was literally dripping off into the oven, and flames were flashing every now and then, and grandmother was shushing with a wet tea towel. And there was this bizarre, strange odor, something like hiking socks that hadn't been washed. And I, what on earth was this? So I was invited to sit down, and here was my grandmother, grandfather, his brother, also known as Grandpa Black Pete, his wife, who I'd never seen smile ever in my life, ever. And some other people who I didn't know that well. And grandmother always had this sort of shuffle. She never walked very well. I mean, she had legs that were sort of large and round, almost like elephants, and she'd sort of walk, and she'd sort of swing things around, and she had this large ceramic bowl, and she placed this on the table, and I was invited to sit down, and here we had sour cabbage soup. All that was in the soup was cabbage, water, and salt. And this big honking piece of bread that had been laid out on a piece of plywood breadboard with the fat side up and the, literally this pork fat dripping off it, and this bread that was a good foot high. And we were invited to sit down, and here we had this simple meal, and I kid you not, the smell of the soup was really very unpleasant. I mean, think of hiking socks that haven't been laundered and they've been sitting on the floor, and you're thinking, man, I should really do the laundry. And we sat down, and my grandfather prayed a simple prayer, and they began to eat. And quite frankly, I was perplexed in every way. I was the only grandchild there. Now, I had taken upon myself to aggravate my grandfather. He hated the NDP, and so whenever we could have the opportunity to talk politics, I would tell him how wonderful the NDP was, and he would get terribly angry, and he said, "You don't understand, the NDP are communists," and then he would rail on about communists. And it was pretty interesting to watch him get ballistic. Took all of about 6 or 8 words, and that would happen. And being a 16-year-old and being an idiot, somehow we took pleasure in doing these things. Sometimes he would take his cane and shake it at us and say, "You don't understand." And the truth was, I didn't understand. A strange thing happened around that table is that the people around the table began to tell stories. Strange stories. Stories that I'd never heard before. They told this story about Mrs. Neufeld, who came to My grandfather, when they were in the village in Russia, a village in Nikolkovitsa, my grandfather had been injured in an accident, so he was in a wheelchair. He'd become the secretary and the bookkeeper. And she asked him for 8 kilos of pork meat. And everybody nodded gravely, as if everyone knew the story. Some years later, when there was an incident in the church community, my mom recounted to me that Mrs. Neufeld's husband had been taken by the KGB, and her brother-in-law had invited her to a pig butcher, and they had butchered a pig and given her 8 kilos of pork meat. And he had showed up that next night with a bottle of vodka demanding sex and payment, and she had refused him. So he had threatened to denounce her to the authorities as a thief, which meant that her children would be orphaned and destitute and potentially starve to death. So she had come pleading to my grandfather, as secretary of the collective farm, to give her a note that she could get 8 kilos of pork meat from the commissary and buy off her brother-in-law. It's a hard story, and everyone, it was told in code. I never heard the whole story that day, but it was told in code, and everyone nodded gravely. And someone said something, "Jake," which is my grandfather, "you did right." That was all that was said. And here I was trying to pick through this greasy bread, and the soup was just awful. And I'm trying to eat this thing, and I'm hearing these stories, and I'm wondering, what? What is this? Then the story was told about a widow coming to my grandfather again. Now he was the mayor of the village. Because he couldn't run, he wasn't inducted into the army. And so when the German army occupied the village in August of 1941, Jacob Rudnikoff became the mayor of the village. Well, one of the widows in the village came to him and said, "My cow didn't freshen. I need another cow." You have to understand that for peasants in a survival mode, a cow that gives milk means that your children drink milk, they have cottage cheese, they have butter, you can live. You can do all, you have a garden and a cow, you can live. If you don't have a cow that gives milk, your children are very quickly malnourished, and with malnourishment comes the flu, and the flu comes pneumonia, and your child is dead in 3 days. So my grandfather, the story is told how my grandfather took this non-freshened cow and led it down through the sentries of the German army, because the German army had gathered all kinds of cattle on the lowlands along the Dnieper River, and they were butchering the beef cattle, and the army troops would come to the Dnieper River, swim on its beaches, and get barbecued beef as rest and relaxation. And my grandfather went in, and he turned to me and he said, "We always only traded cows, we never stole." Because what he did was at night, went in, traded this cow that wouldn't freshen, and found a cow that was full with milk, and took it out of the herd and brought it to this widowed woman. By this time, I was profoundly confused. Why on earth are these stories being told, and what's the significance of them? Then the stories turned to something horrible. And again, the story is told in code, how one man who had been designated the policeman of the village got drunk, and he and his friend cornered a Ukrainian man in the horse barn and beat him to death for fun. Murder. In the village. In my home village, where my parents were born. And how when this man's widow came to my grandfather, who was the mayor, and he went to the German authorities, they went, "He's Ukrainian, it doesn't matter." All the people around the table nodded gravely and they said, "Na ja, Zovadis, that's the way it was. That somehow this life of this non-German person was of no value. And yet on the faces of around all these people gathered at the table, this was someone that they knew who had fed their horses when they came in from work. And he was someone that they'd eaten with and whose widow they knew. These were all hard stories. And then abruptly the stories would change. And they would talk about, remember Henry Siemens? And they went, oh yeah. And then they'd laugh. And again, the story was told in code. They'd say, you remember how Henry Siemens used to take those thin willow sticks from along the creek? And they'd laugh and they'd go, yeah. And I finally asked, so what did they do? And they said, well, we would work all day in the fields. We would be very tired. And on the way back, some of the children would be placed on the horses because they couldn't walk back from the fields. This is a collective farm, 1938. And the children would fall asleep on the plow horses. So they'd be draped over the plow horses, and the plow horses would be shuffling home. And Henry Siemens, who seemed to have more energy than sense, would take a long willow stick and stick it up the horse's behind, and it would buck, and the children would be bucked off, and everyone would laugh. So here in the midst of hard labor and exhaustion, someone's playing a prank. And they laughed and said, yeah, Henry was funny. And then they said, remember Henry's mom, who had a nervous breakdown and was insane? He at 16 was head of the household because his father had been taken away. And somehow this irrepressible optimism was something that kept spirits alive. A little snippet from my grandfather Bergen, whom I've never known. He was taken by the KGB in 1938. I've never met him. Someone said, yeah, Jacob Bergen could tell such a funny story that you forgot you were hungry. And that's where I think I get some of the storytelling in my family. Finally, the soup was finished. The bread was almost all eaten. We were served cold crips, that is, roasted barley coffee, no cream, no sugar. It's not my favorite. It's not served at Starbucks. And when that was done, a few stories would be told of coming to Canada, of Peter Dick meeting my grandfather and my mom and my dad and uncles and aunts in Holland, and the suspicion with which my grandfather greeted Peter Dick, convinced that he was a KGB agent. And it was only when Peter Dick from Rostrum, Saskatchewan could have a church service in Low German that they believed that he wasn't a KGB agent. Low German is a strange dialect that Mennonites and others in the Baltic speak. And finally, my grandfather stood up at the table, placed his hands on the table like this, and simply said, Gesegnete die Mahlzeit, which is a German term that means this meal has been blessed. It also can mean this meal has been a blessing to us. And then it was over. I left, had a cigarette on the way home. I had no idea what I'd experienced. What I'd heard was a number of stories, some of them very unpleasant. I had no idea until that day that there'd been a murder in the village where my parents were from. Some years later, at Fresno Pacific College, I took an introduction to the Old Testament. And as part of that, I was invited to read the book of Exodus. And out of that, I came to realize that that Saturday, with that horrible bread and that soup that smelled like old hiking socks that needed to be laundered, I had in fact experienced my own Mennonite Passover. that in code, my grandfather and grandmother had told the story of sin and brokenness and people who had tried to walk with integrity in the midst of that sin.